satanic shift of societal, religious, scientific, and political sentiments is at work in America, which may have no historical precedent. The most obvious practitioner is the GOP's Donald Trump, who sold himself as not just opposed to political correctness, but against any trite or wimpy theories whatsoever. Just the fact he's unpredictable and constitutionally contrarian thrills at least one-third of Americans. Now he must work on the other one-third needed to win. But yet, below him, working like termites in the floorboards, is an attack on quintessential American political ideals such as politeness, generosity, helping others in foreign places, and holding one's tongue in the face of rude statements. Yet deeper still, Americans seem to be fascinated by the notion that a person with the right mix of moxie and aggression could be followed anywhere, even into new policy positions. The Liberal Party has parlayed years of increasingly antinomian or anti-law ideas along with the officially anointed aggrievement factory, creating a toxic mix of angry, smug leftism. Obama has surfed this wave with stunning proficiency, and yet Barack's slim list of achievements and increasingly dismissive and haughty attitude suggest that any person without sufficient gravitas is bound to fail long term. Therefore, Obama's savage battle over his legacy, already well underway with critics, has taken on all the sacred honor of a bloody duel between starving hogs over a last rancid corn cob. Yet the liberal denomination of smugness, the state-sponsored religion fighting daily for the feeble minds of the credulous, is seen as increasingly making the Democrats a party not worth fighting for. There may be a worse way to market oneself than claiming that anybody who disagrees is an uneducated yokel, buffoon, idiot, but it's hard to imagine. In fact, many liberals today refuse to even symbolic levels of debate, content to simply write off anyone who dares disagree as in need of public assistance for mental handicap or that they are morally obtuse or criminally insane. Any way you slice it, you have an abusive mentality behind the movement which cannot hope to persuade by appeal to logic, facts, and arguments. No wonder leftists instinctively believe without political power or law to force their opponents' agreement, they'll be more DOA than Prince, which explains the importance of the PC movement to this group. In the meantime, I today propose a theory which, right or wrong, at least switches the smug liberal assumptions on anthropogenic global warming to a novel scientific explanation. Will this idea have any staying power? Undoubtedly not, but at least you might be intrigued and entertained. Stay tuned, sports fans. Good morning. All right. So, you know, I was thinking about this change that we're going through right now. And on this 25th of April, 2016, I was thinking about how, you know, after a period of kind of decline, political decline from maybe you could mark it from Richard Nixon on forward or even before, go back to JFK or whoever you want, things have been changing kind of behind the scenes, and now it's caught up to the political parties and ideas. And so in rapid change, you have ideas like, you know, gay marriage and stuff coming in that radically challenge the most basic assumptions of the society. And so that's not just a political movement. That's also religious, because marriage is quintessentially, at least in a Christian sense, a religious idea. And you've got changing beliefs or definitions of what it means to be a citizen, and therefore at least maybe half the country wants illegals to be brought in and made citizens instantly and put on social welfare, which seems to suggest it. And if you can't kick any of these people out for illegally entering, that seems to suggest that every person in the world is an American if they can get across the border, which is an insane idea. But I think that it kind of sums up the place where we're at right now, which is a time of transition in which a lot of our ideas are kind of getting moved around, kind of sifted, recalculated, and you're going from a country that was at some level Christian, and I don't know, I mean, there's still a lot of Christian people out there, a lot of people go to church every Sunday, but many churches, many of the older churches are full of older people, and the younger people are either finding more trendy churches to go to, more updated styles of worship and approaches to the Bible, or they're just staying home. So what the end result of all of that will be, if you talk to a theologian, a person who's into these type of things, I think they would tell you that we're either going to have a revival or we're going to collapse as a society, or at least we're going to radically change. And then we're not going to be that different from the rest of the world, which was the entire point of Obama's presidency, from what I can understand. So anyway, just my thoughts for the day. And yes, I do have a novel idea on global warming that I wanted to roll out. And I have a few stories to kind of go along with that. Now, some of your headlines today, 523-1450 to call in, by the way. Kasich and Cruz are planning to take on Trump to deny him the nomination. And you're saying, well, probably saying, well, why did this take so long? And the answer is they're both, I guess, alpha males that don't want to compromise and have somebody else be president. But amongst the two, it would make sense for Cruz to be president, or would it? Maybe Kasich president and Cruz vice president. So there's not really that many states left, but the states are big states like New Jersey and California that would definitely cover a lot of ground. Now, Donald Trump would have to get 60% of the remaining delegates to get the nomination. So is that going to happen? I have no idea. But the more stuff like this that happens, the less likely it is, of course. And in Maine, they say that Cruz is coming in and doing the same thing that he did in other places, stealing delegates. Now, whether it's stealing or not, that has to be defined. But I guess it's not really stealing if the process allows that type of thing. So anyway, it's just so strange to try to follow all of this. But also now we've got a few other stories, and I'm sure that you've heard by this time that Prince was an extraordinary drug addict, and that he had stayed up 154 hours before he died. So his drug dealer, who said that he was heavily, heavily into opioids since the 1980s, said that he had sold him up to $40,000 worth of drugs per exchange, and that he figured he did at least $200 to $300 worth of drugs per day, and that basically he had extreme stage fright, like the worst he'd ever seen. And so to do anything, he had to be on drugs. And he said just to interact with other people, he had to a room with more than five people in it, he would have to take drugs to feel good. All right. Johnny Manziel, by the way, the quarterback, Johnny Football, has been indicted. And I have a few weather stories for you. Now, I don't know if somebody from the sheriff's office is coming on today to talk about this document, release that they did, but it is possible. Anyway, here is a little bit on Cruz and Kasich campaigning together to stop the Donald. And it is 6:16 on AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOB, Kelly O'Connell Show.
To take down Trump. Ted Cruz and John Kasich, they are announcing a brand new alliance. They announced it overnight to work together to ensure a contested convention in July.
But will their plan actually work? Kristen Fisher is live in Washington, D.C. this morning with the latest. Kristen, good morning.
Good morning, ladies. You know, this is something that many political analysts have been talking about for some time, that perhaps this kind of teamwork is what it would take to stop Donald Trump. But for it to actually happen months before the convention, it is a massive surprise and perhaps unprecedented in presidential politics. Last night at the Fox News town hall, Ted Cruz and John Kasich never mentioned that they'd be joining forces. But right after it was over, the two campaigns issued coordinated statements just minutes apart. Cruz's campaign manager said, quote, "To ensure that we nominate a Republican who can unify the Republican Party and win in November, our campaigns will focus its time and resources in Indiana and in turn clear the path for Governor Kasich to compete in Oregon and New Mexico." Well, Kasich's campaign says, quote, "Our goal is to have an open convention in Cleveland where we are confident a candidate capable of uniting the party and winning in November will emerge as the nominee." Well, as you might imagine, Donald Trump responded on Twitter by saying, "Wow, just announced that Lion Ted and Kasich are going to collude in order to keep me from getting the Republican nomination. Desperation." Now, keep in mind, this is all happening just one day before five big primaries. And right now, Trump's ahead in the state with the most delegates up for grabs tomorrow, Pennsylvania. A new NBC News Wall Street Journal Marist poll shows Trump ahead by 18 points. Cruz is in second, Kasich third. Now, today, protesters are planning to descend on a Trump rally at Westchester University in Pennsylvania. Online petitioners are trying to stop the event, but the university says that it will go on as planned. You know, up until today, the Stop Trump movement was operating more behind the scenes, Cruz fighting for every single delegate. Well, now that fight has really just blown up into the open just when you thought that this race couldn't get any crazier. Abby and Heather, it just did.
Yes, it did, and it probably will get even crazier moving forward.
All right, and so have a couple of other clips here for you. There is some bad news for Cruz, or Cruz followers, in terms of his debate performance, or pardon me, his poll performance, and we'll have to pick those up in just a minute. They're kind of very slow loading, the way things do on this computer, but here is a little dedication to the county manager. Be the Beatles, "Baby, You Can Drive My Car." 619, the rumor is, although I have been told in no uncertain terms, it is an ugly, false rumor that Julia Brown takes people's cars for her own. Here's a dedication. 523-1450 to call in, 805-6180 to text, although I don't think I have my text machine. AM Las Cruces 1450 KOB. We'll be right back.
That's the girl that she wanted to be. She said, "Baby, can't you see? I want her to start this week. You can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car.
All right, so I do have some stuff on Prince coming up, but I want to play for you a little bit. Now, here's from Trump letting you know what he thinks of this these rivals limping up to the finish line.
GOP frontrunner Donald Trump is making headlines. Maybe a couple enemies this week after hammering the RNC over what he calls a, quote, rigged, phony, crooked delegate system. But Trump, who leads the delegate count, appears to be benefiting from the system. Biggest beneficiary so far. He also made headlines over comments on abortion this week. So let's debate it all with Penny Nance, author of the new book, Feisty and Feminine, a rallying cry for conservative women and president of Concerned Women for America. And Emily Miller, author of Emily Gets Her Gun, But Obama Wants to Take Yours. Ladies, good to see you both.
Thank you.
And just for the record, Concerned Women for America, you've endorsed Cruz.
As correct. An individual, yeah.
You as an individual yeah. have, and you as an individual supporting Mr. Trump, correct?
Well, there you have it.
Okay, I am
today. Well, I am today. The one person.
Today.
No, no, I will. You know what? It's time to come clean.
Okay.
I'm out there. The one human being in Washington, D.C. who will openly say, I voted for Trump.
There you go. Okay.
This is boring. All right, let's go to the poll numbers of Cruz for California. California coming up. I mean, it couldn't possibly be any more exciting. Every day there's new news that's coming out about some unexpected angle on this race. So check this out from Krauthammer.
What he's hoping for is to last through Indiana, win in Indiana, make Indiana his new Wisconsin.
He's talking about Cruz, by the way.
And then go to California, which is where everything is going to hinge. But we also have numbers on that, and they are devastating for Cruz.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Trump, I think, almost 50%.
Yeah, he's at 49%, Cruz 22, Kasich 20. So, I mean, that's a massive.
That's a New York massacre. So if that happens, and let's assume that Indiana and California end up where the polls are, then I don't see how Cruz has a claim.
All right, so there is a weird story out there about a former senator who announced that he is married. He was married for, I don't know, 40, 50 years. He's 90 years old. His boyfriend, of course, you knew it was coming to something like that. His boyfriend is 40 years, 50 years his junior. They've been together for 20 years. So doing the math here, he met his boyfriend when his boyfriend was 20 and he was 70. So they're marrying and they can't believe their luck. You want to call it that. But I don't understand spending your entire life straight and then at the very end of your life coming out of the closet. And so he was only senator, I think, for 3 or 4 years in Pennsylvania. And he and his wife were, I think, fairly liberal people. But U.S. Senator Harris Wolford announced he will be marrying a man 50 years his junior, 20 years after his wife's death. He's 90 now. He was 70 when he met his boyfriend. His boyfriend was 20 and he was 70. And he says, too often our society, he put an op-ed into the New York Times, too often our society seeks to label people by pinning them on the wall or against the wall. Straight, gay, or in between, I don't categorize myself based on the gender of those I love. I had a half century of marriage with a wonderful woman, and now I am lucky for a second time to have found happiness. That is astounding. So here's a question. The question is basically, is it a better world that we're in now? Now that gay people can get married, has it made it better or worse? That's a fair question, isn't it? All right, here's on Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football getting indicted by the NFL.
We know some of the allegations made against Manziel. What do we know about the process that finally brought us to this point and the indictment?
Well, we know that the grand jury heard the evidence, John, on Thursday of last, and when the grand jury did not return what's called a no bill on that same day, which is typically what happens, all indications were at that point that Manziel would be indicted. Usually a no bill, meaning no indictment, is returned same day. So when that didn't happen, then the next step was for a few business days to transpire before an indictment. And we got word from the Dallas County District Attorney's Office on Friday that an announcement would be coming Monday. And just based on the timing of the announcement alone, a lot of people drew the conclusion that he would indeed be indicted. And you referred to this correctly. It is a Class A misdemeanor, and that's very unusual. And it does now look like Johnny Manziel will be indicted.
All right. We obviously haven't heard from anything from Manziel or his camp on Sunday night. But throughout this, they've maintained what?
Well, we have heard some. I spoke with his Dallas-based attorney, Robert Hinton, on Friday. And Hinton told me that some of the evidence in this case, most notably hotel valet area surveillance video, will actually work in favor of his client.
All right, so Johnny Manziel, but it's just a misdemeanor, and I wonder if the NFL will keep him out crime if it's a misdemeanor. On the other hand, it's a crime of violence against a woman, and the NFL has gotten into a lot of PR trouble because of not really paying attention to this. All right, our dedication to the county here. 6:30 a.m. Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450 to call in, and 805-6180 to text. Hello, where's my text? I can't find it. We'll be right back.
That girl, that my prospects were good. She said, baby, I'm done good. Working for peanuts is all very fine, but I can show you the time. Maybe you can drop my car.
All right, it's 6:34, and I've got some weather for you. Rockies could see another foot of snow, believe it or not. It's deep into April, but we've still got snow storms and even blizzards coming through. And I don't know if you're aware that the last storm up in Colorado got 40 inches in some places, but check this out from the Weather Channel.
Spring has been around for nearly a month, but that's still snow hanging on out to the west. We have another system moving through that is basically going to affect the higher elevations. Now, this is going to be from Monday to Wednesday, and we are going to see this snow push west to east. So it will come out of the Sierra Nevada, push through the Rockies, and then eventually by Tuesday into Wednesday, we'll see this move into the high plains. Temperatures are marginally cold, so we're looking at basically the snow, the highest snow amounts to come down through the higher elevations. So that's what we're forecasting. In some parts of the higher elevations, we could get up to a foot. Generally, though, we're looking at a widespread 3 to 5.
All right, and now here is a story that has brought with it a little bit of controversy. They're forecasting days ahead tornadoes in the Midwest, and the question is, how far ahead does a forecast make it in the sense of is it too much? You know, is it too far in the future? So I think the sooner the better. But here we go from Weather Channel on severe outbreak for Tuesday of expected tornadoes.
There's a look at Superior, Nebraska, where a tornado touched down on Sunday. Now this is kicking off what has the potential to be a wild week, a dangerous week of severe weather. All the ingredients are in place. We're talking the Midwest, the plains. That will be the focus, especially on Tuesday when we're looking for this potential outbreak to happen. Strong tornadoes, very large hail, damaging winds, and lightning. Again, this has the potential to be a very dangerous situation. By Tuesday afternoon, storms firing up in St. Louis, by early evening, Dallas, all the way up to Kansas, even into the Ohio Valley. Overnight, Tuesday into Wednesday, we will still see these storms ongoing. Wednesday, there's a look at the severe weather threat. It's from the Midwest into the plains.
All the way from Houston up to, well, into Nebraska, beyond Nebraska. So, but the tornadoes, I'd like to know a few days in advance myself. All right, so let's get to, well, I have local weather for you, so let's take a break and come back and talk about Prince. His death. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450. We'll be right back. 637. All right. There's a very, very strange interaction between Barack Obama and Boris Johnson, who is the mayor of London. And Boris Johnson is a blonde-haired guy, very energetic. He's fairly conservative. And he wants to leave the EU because of all the negative things that that folks have to go through in the EU, including being open to all of these migrants from the Middle East. And so in the midst of this, Barack Obama said that if you try to do that, you're going to be put at the end of the line. So basically, Barack Obama, who goes around saying we should mind our own business and we will lead from the behind, well, we'll lead from behind. Maybe he does lead from his behind. But he said that basically that England would be punished. England would be punished by the United States if they tried to leave the EU by being at the end of the queue on deals. So once again, a very strange thing. And so Boris Johnson comes out and calls and says that he is a very weird person. And which is true. I mean, objectively speaking, and I read a kind of an interesting article over the weekend that claims that although Obama is a success in the minds of this newspaper, that he is also a weirdo. Because he didn't have any experience as a leader. But here's Boris Johnson going after the president.
Obviously, people will make of the
art. And this is outside of some store that they stopped him in London to ask him this question, how he can defend his comments on Obama regarding what they're calling the Brexit or the British exit to the EU.
What they want. But the crucial point is that I'm a big fan of Barack Obama is on the first people to come out in favor of him ages ago. But I think there's a weird paradox when the President of the United States, a country that would never dream of sharing its sovereignty over anything, instructs or urges us politely to get more embroiled in the European Union, which is already making 60% of our laws. Furthermore, I think it's a bit much when the Americans, with all due respect to our wonderful American diplomats here in London, owe this city £9 million in unpaid congestion charge. And for them to tell us that not at all. I think the issue is really about democracy. And America guards its democracy very jealously and quite properly. And I think that we should be entitled to do so as well. But I also think the crucial thing is I think that it's possible for Britain to be a more powerful and more effective ally of America and have a bigger voice in the international community if we get out from under the EU system and we stop allowing ourselves in so many of these international bodies to be represented by the EU. When Britain's voice on its own can be very powerful.
I think his point is that we would be able to fight terrorism better within the EU.
Let's take that on, because it's a very interesting point. People like Richard Dearlove take a completely...
All right, so the thing that they're going into right now is whether the EU would be better together fighting terrorism as opposed to individually. And I think that we've already seen the EU's response to terrorism has been... it has been pathetic, really. I mean, the Parisians are allowing thousands and thousands of Muslims to come daily and shut down entire boulevards in their city during their prayer periods. There are individuals moving across the EU who are terrorists, who one country knows as terrorists and tells the other country, and the other country doesn't even take any notice of it. And that person then goes and blows the airport up. And this kind of stuff is happening all over Europe. So I've never seen anything like it. All right. So in other words, mind your business, Mr. Trump, or pardon me, Mr. Obama is apparently the position taken by the mayor of London. London's a great place. I don't know if you've ever been there, but it's kind of an exciting place to go. Here is Prince. I've got a little clip of Prince, his first time on American Bandstand. And afterwards is an interview that Dick Clark said was the hardest of his career. And hold on just a second here. Prince dancing around and singing.
VH1's Best of American Bandstand with your host, Dick Clark.
Hi, this is Dick Clark, and I'm here on stage 55 at the ABC Studios in Hollywood, where we taped American Bandstand. And this is the site of probably the single most difficult interview I ever did in my life. It was a superstar. It gave me fits when he came on American Bandstand because this was his network television debut, but America didn't learn a whole lot about him because when I interviewed him, the man hardly made a sound. I couldn't get anything out of him. Coming up on today's...
So anyway, there is this very strange interview, but they say that Prince was... He was a very, very shy guy, and the reason that he took all these drugs was because he was so shy, and he found it almost impossible to interact with other people, and especially not perform. 646 AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 is the call-in line, and I'm going to come back, and I've got some stories about Prince that you might find astounding, as I did. Really unbelievable. But we'll be right back to talk about that. Okay, so Prince, the performer, was 57 years old, and he had the reputation as being very clean, living very clean, and everything. And he lived in a suburb of Minneapolis that was, I don't know, maybe 20,000 people, and he had a compound in this. Basically, it was a suburb, I guess, and the compound had on it. It was, they called it 50,000 acres, which I found a little bit, I couldn't really see a picture. They just showed the corner. So maybe that they meant 5,000 or 500 acres. I don't know. But anyway, he had a house there and he also had a studio, and they showed a picture of the studio, and it looked like a $1 million studio, to say the least. So that's where he did a lot of his stuff. Now, according to his brother-in-law, he spent the last 154 hours awake, which tells me that he was on some kind of uppers. And they said that he was working on his biography, his autobiography, and had written about 50 pages when he died. Now, he was in a plane, his own private jet, a Dassault Falcon, and was flying. And the plane had to turn around and come back because, from what I understand, he was either going into cardiac arrest or he was lapsing into a coma. They brought him to the hospital. And so they gave him a Narcan shot. And Narcan completely wipes out any opioid or opium-based medication in your system. So they wanted him to stay in the hospital. But because of the fact that he couldn't get his own private room, he left, and which was probably what cost him his life. Now, his former drug dealer, who goes by the name Dr. D, said that he would spend up to $40,000 a time on a six-month supply of Dilaudid pills and fentanyl patches. And I did some research on that, and Dilaudid is a drug that they give to people before surgery. And fentanyl is kind of artificial opium. If you're in the medical profession, and I'm making a mistake on this, feel free to call up. But basically, these are very powerful drugs that he took since the 1980s because of this crippling shyness that he had. And he could not get on stage without drugs. And Dr. D said he was always a pill man. That's why nobody ever saw him do drugs. He never shot up or snorted cocaine. And fentanyl comes in a patch that lasts for, I guess, a number of days. And it is 50 to 100 times stronger than opium. And so it is extremely powerful. So he would have been buzzing on a fairly regular basis. Now, the Dr. D said that the superstar Prince was hooked on powerful opiates for over 25 years. And he called the musician majorly addicted, and that he regularly brought drugs for him from him between 1984 and 2008. And one of the things that he bought drugs for was the Coachella Music Festival. He called his condition a crippling stage fright, and he thinks that after he got this Narcan shot that wiped his system out of opioids, that what happened was the singer probably took some more, and then he was given by the doctor also Percocet. And Percocet has within it, I'll get down to that in just a second, but those, he thinks that these two drugs were kind of at war with the guy, that he was heavily addicted, and he took three or four times as much drugs as he saw other people take because he had been an addict so long. He said he met the Prince in 1984 while he was filming the movie Purple Rain, and he was already a major addict. He said, addicted to opiates. I didn't hook him on drugs. He was already hooked. And he would buy Speed as well as Dilaudid, and black pills and cross tops called Black Beauties, Speed pills. So he must have been on some sort of a speed pill when he OD'd. And he said he never took heroin as far as I know it. But so he would take one drug to take away this nervousness or this kind of sense of dis-ease, this lack of comfort around people. But these type of drugs tend to be downers. So then he would take uppers to be able to perform. And he said, you know, that he... One of the things that he said was kind of interesting is he said that he didn't really have much of a personality and that the personality came from the drugs. And he said when he wasn't on drugs, he was just a fairly boring person. Now, Prince, as you recall, and we're talking about the performer Prince, had gone to Walgreens Pharmacy right before he died and was photographed outside of the store. They don't know what he was getting there, but he may have been put on Percocet. And so the Percocet would have been kind of going back and forth against the Dilaudid, which is a very, very powerful opioid. And so when they found him dead in this elevator, and the fact that he didn't have any known physical conditions, then they deduced that he had overdosed. Now, Dr. D said that if Prince was prescribed Percocet by the doctors, it was a combination of Tylenol and opiates may have killed him. If he was just taking Dilaudid, he'd still be alive because he knew how to manage that, but he couldn't mix the two. And the Dr. D said, when you take that much Tylenol, it causes major problems, especially in the kidneys. But doctors would have freaked out if they had known the extent of his drug use. And so the doctors who thought they were helping him actually killed him, probably because they didn't know his medical history. And if they gave him a shot of Narcan to counteract an overdose he had on his plane, it wipes out all of the drugs in your system. And then he would have had to take a lot of drugs to feel okay again. And he also began to use fentanyl, a synthetic opioid, approximately 80 to 100 times more potent than morphine, and 40 to 50 times more potent than heroin. He wore the patches on his body. They would last 72 hours. And he even saw him smoke one, but he normally didn't do that type of thing. So he was always functional. And like I say, $200 to $300 a day in drugs. He ate well just to stay alive. He was afraid of the fame, but he missed it when it was gone. So those both caused him to take drugs, and he wanted him on the payroll. But anyway, so that's what happened to Prince, and he didn't have much of a personality until he was on his drugs. Poor guy. 6:59, we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Ken Roberts from the Dona Ana Sheriff's Office to talk about what happened in this recent release of documents. We'll be right back. Kelly Connell, 6:59, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE. And this is dedicated to Julia Downtown Brown. And she'll take your car if you're not, if you do anything wrong, she will take your car so fast you won't believe it. We'll be right back. So 7:06. And as I've mentioned before, the media tends to do such a poor job in the United States that you have to get your information from the UK. But the Daily Mail had some great stories on it, including an interview with Dr. D, his Prince's drug dealer. And but one of the things that came out about this, and I was never a real fan of his music, but one of the things that came out about this is, yes, he was a lifetime addict, but There were a lot of testimonials. A lot of testimonials on what a nice person he was. And this is something that he came up with and apparently mentioned to people a lot, which was it was important to be nice. Now, he had been raised a Jehovah's Witness, or pardon me, he was raised a Seventh-day Adventist. And then one of his musician partners had kind of talked him into the JWs, Jehovah's Witnesses. But they said that he was, and his drug dealer said that he always wanted to talk about his religion and coming to meetings and everything. And that basically that the drug dealer thought that it was something that he did out of being embarrassed to buy so many drugs or to be buying drugs when he was religious. But he talked about his religion all the time. And apparently he talked to a lot of people about his religion. So a very religious guy and a person who was very shy and an extraordinarily talented person. And also a nice person, a person who valued very highly being nice, even though he was kind of a, you know, mysterious figure, and he kind of hid away behind the walls of his house and his studio. And anyway, he made a huge imprint. But I would also say, I mean, to the extent that we make these super, performers are always going to have drug problems because of the nature of performing itself is to be up and to be ready to perform is kind of an unnatural thing. It's unnatural to be a superstar. It's unnatural to be a performer. In the way, same way it's unnatural for a woman to be a stripper. I mean, it's just not the kind of thing that people naturally typically do, and it doesn't seem to bring out the best mental health in people. So anyway, it's a real shame that I was going to say had to die that way, but obviously he didn't have to die that way if he was taking drugs. But maybe once you get into the drugs deep enough, there's no coming back. So all right, so we've got other news, and I do have Ken Roberts in the studio, but Trump is soaring in the new polls in Pennsylvania. He's up 26 points, Connecticut 34 points, Rhode Island 38 points. And so, and it, this is a very weird thing. I will only mention it to you because I'm looking at it. There is a woman who looks exactly like Ted Cruz, and no, she is not attractive. And they are paying her to get into porn. So I cannot imagine. I shudder to think about it. But it's not every person who has a female lookalike that they can talk into going into porn. But anyway, good morning, Ken Roberts. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Kelly. Good, good.
Well, it's been a while since I've seen you. And I know that you've been in training, various training things, but also you've been working away on a case.
That case ended sometime in December, and went to training after that, and got a lot of things going on since we last met with the union and GRT, and then, you know, everything that's in the newspaper. So thought I'd come on and visit with you.
Great to see you.
Good to see you too.
And now there was a dump of documents, or there was an IPRA request, and the Walt Rubel came on last week and talked about it, just scratching the surface, but it has to do with a case involving the jailer, Chris Barella. And Chris Barella has gone through the justice system already. And from what I understand, he is probably bulletproof in terms of double jeopardy and everything. But what came out in these documents is that there was a whole lot more evidence that didn't come into the grand jury that was not used in the prosecution of, or the attempted prosecution of Chris Barella. Is there anything about that that you can comment on?
Well, what I can tell you is that through the investigation, a lot of things come up, and like any other investigation, you might head into it in one direction. Basically, this investigation was initiated well before the Sheriff's Department got a hold of it. If you, and that's in the documents. If you track back It was actually a couple commissioners that brought forward the original investigation, brought it forward to the DA's office, and then it was brought forward to state police office, and then it was brought forward to our office. And the one consistent thing is the county never wants that to come out. They don't want to discuss the laundry that's being cleaned over there. So, but as we got into it, you know, a lot of different things came out of that. And I think as it goes on, I think Walt and through comprehensive investigative reported, I think a lot of that will come out and things that were looked at. Maybe were not criminal, were put to one side. Those that were possibly in the criminal trail were put to the other and positioned before the district attorney.
All right. So just putting myself in your shoes, I know that you take your job very seriously. You ran to be the sheriff, and I thought that you were as articulate as anybody who came into the studio. I was impressed with your strategy and your plans and everything, and I thought you had thought deeply about things. If I was to put myself in your shoes, I would feel very frustrated at, I spent 1,000 hours working on a case, was very dedicated to it. And then when the case comes up, that all that information that the blood, sweat, and tears went into to find is not used in the, indictment, is not used in the, grand jury. It had to be frustrating. Can we get your thoughts on that when we come back?
You bet.
Okay, folks, talking to Ken Roberts, and anyway, Mark D'Antonio, I'm on very friendly terms with. He came on the show the other day, and Mark, you're more than welcome to come on the show and give your version of things, but right now we're dealing with the sheriff's office, and from what I understand, a fairly high level of frustration at how the Chris Barella prosecution investigation grand jury went. 714, this is another dedication to downtown Julia Brown. Don't screw up. You may be without a car. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450. We'll be right back.
We start with Denny Wilson on the drums. Helped out by car. When we're ready to sing.
Beach Boys here. We'll come back.
And it comes out.
We'll come back to this live performance, a little do scoop, but we'll be back. All right, so we're here with Ken Roberts. And Ken, what was the level of frustration when you realized that the blood, sweat, and tears, the work product that you had put together over 6 months was to a large extent not used in the grand jury?
Well, I think anytime you know, a person puts or persons, our office worked diligently on the investigation as it does every other investigation. But I think anytime any individual puts into their project as much as they can to go in a particular direction. If it doesn't go in that direction, there's frustration. So initially there was, but whenever we look at it, our job at the Sheriff's Department is to collect evidence. For the justice system to work, we present that evidence to the viewing authority, which is the DA's office. From the DA's office, it either goes to trial, it goes to grand jury, or it goes by the wayside. So whenever I step back and I take a look at it, did I do my job? Did the sheriff's department do what they were tasked with? Yes, they did. After that, it has to be out of our hands, and we have to allow the justice system to work.
Well, I'm sure that Mark would say if he was here that he used the evidence that was available, and the stuff that he didn't use was either not relevant or it was past its shelf life, you know, in terms of I'm just guessing what he would say. Not saying this is true, but he would. I can only imagine that he would probably say that statute of limitations and such.
Well, definitely there was issues that were statute of limitations. But that would bring up some questions for me for the county. If I, which I am a taxpayer and a citizen, if you knew that there was some things that went on, why weren't they dealt with then? If their criminal had ran its statute of limitations, does that mean that the administrative ran its statute of limitations? There is no statute of limitations on the administrative whenever you're dealing with public funds. So, you know, the sheriff's department did their job. The investigation went the direction that the evidence led it. And now we move on to the next investigation.
Well, it made the sheriff's office look like there was a kind of a contract was put out on Chris Barella, and, you know, evidence was gathered up and it was insufficient. And then it was given to the DA. The DA went forward with it on part, and Chris Barella was charged. And then he was not really never, you know, nothing ever came to fruition. And it made the sheriff's office, in my opinion, look like it was personal as opposed to legal.
Well, I think a lot of people would like it to appear that way. And the fact of the matter is that I personally probably not met Mr. Barella twice in the 8 years that I've been working at the Sheriff's Department. But whenever we look at the focus of it was so broad, everything that was brought forward that the news agencies now have, and I'm sure Walt and his dedicated team will be working through different aspects of it. But what I can tell you is that, especially as president of the association and working closely with the sheriff and the case agent on that, the fact of the matter is that the sheriff didn't bring this case forward. The sheriff's office received this case. It happened to be at the detention office. It was after the court clerk's case that this case was brought to us. And it was brought forward, the initial to us, by internal employees that want to change or that believe something's wrong. So we can't then turn around and go, oh, this is going to look bad because it'll look like we're trying to do something. That's not what we're tasked.
No, I know. But there was just one thing that came out that I think captured people's attention. There were a number of flat screen TVs that disappeared. Do we have any idea what happened to those?
No, we don't. And that's one of the issues that we were working through, is that because the county has policy. County has policy. The state has policy. DFA has policy. Everybody has policy about tax dollars. Now, I attended a commission meeting where county legal stood up and said, all of the inmate welfare fund is county money. It's county money. And if that's true and it's to be treated as county money, then there are responsibilities. One of those responsibilities was that you have to have documentation of how you spend it, where it's at, tracking on it, and if you do away with it, what you did with it. What we found was that some 80-some flat-screen TVs, according to the documents we have, were purchased over 5 years, the last 5 years, 2010 to 2015.
What would be a typical price of these things?
$500.
So 80 times 500 is?
40,000.
A lot of money.
A lot of money. So whenever you look at that, and some were less, you know, 469, we found the receipts. But whenever we subpoenaed the documents asking the county to show us where all these TVs are at, in accordance with their own policy, in accordance with the state's policy, in accordance with use of county money, the response that I got back from Mr. Gooden was no documents exist. So no, we can't track it because for the past 5 years, we've been spending county money and not tracking it. Now, who's responsible for that? Where is it? Where are they? Did they walk out? Were they purchased and sent somewhere else? We don't know. Why? No documents exist.
No paper trail. And so, but this happened under Chris Barella's reign.
He is the director there. Yes, that's correct.
And there were other issues that came up as well. Is there a time that you will be able to get a little deeper into these things?
You know, actually, we've, in accordance with state statute and with the AG's office, we've provided the documents that were requested. And to tell you the truth, the justice system has made their decision. We're moving forward to the next case.
Okay. All right. So I'm looking at a website called Let the Sheriff Speak. Why don't we take a little break here and come back and talk about what that's about?
You got it.
Okay. Here with Ken Roberts, folks. 724. He's from the sheriff's office and one of the leaders down there. AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523-1450 on the 25th of April. And we'll be right back.
Well, I'm not bragging, babe, so don't put me down. But I've got the fastest pedal wheel to be down. When something comes up to me, you don't even try. If the had a set of wings, man, I know she would fly. Be my little nasty.
It's 7:29 and on the 25th of April, and I've got Ken Roberts here. Now, Ken, I'm looking at our website right now. It's a very simple website. It's called Let the Sheriff Speak, and at the bottom, the topics are home, gross receipt, public safety, deputies, fleet, radio system, salaries, RMS, videos, public trust. What's going on here?
Well, LetTheSheriffSpeak.com, it's kind of a funny story the way the name came about. That is actually the website that belongs to the Donina County Sheriff's Deputies Association and CWA 7911, and which I am one of the representatives for, and I'm proud to be a representative for
Union.
Them. That's correct. I am the union president. And LetTheSheriffSpeak.com is a... basically, it's a website to let the public know that, you know what, sometimes the things you're told just aren't quite the way they are supposed to be. And that's over the GRT and some different issues there. If the public goes on and look and goes through it, they're going to learn a whole lot of things that the county probably doesn't want them to know.
Such as?
Well, one of those is the Hold Harmless GRT, where that went. And we had a very brave commissioner, Commissioner Benavides, that took a portion of that. If you think back to the date that that came in and play, the public was told, look, we're going to increase your taxes by 0.375. That's going to equal a little $12 million or more dollars. And but, you know, before you get upset about it, here's what we're going to do with it. We're going to take an eighth of that and we're going to put it towards public safety. We're going to take an eighth of that and put it towards the detention center and some vehicle issues. Then we're going to take another eighth of that and we're going to put it over somewhere else and handle some other issues. But instead, what happened was, and that's why the LetTheSheriffSpeak.com came out, the sheriff learned that that wasn't necessarily the way that money was going to go. Because what they did was, instead of putting it on top of the sheriff's department budget so that we could address fleet issues and the different things that were going on that are basically impacting the community and the citizens, they put the money into the budget and they took the same amount of money out of the budget. Now, LetSheriffSpeak.com is about letting the public know we've got a new budget year coming up, and it's telling the public to contact their representatives, look at what's going on, and tell their representatives that's unacceptable. We want you to use the tax dollars, like I said, or give it back. And if you won't do that, then the message on there is replace those people that are running with people who will. People have asked me, well, does have any, you know, just let the sheriff speak.com. The way we came up with that name is the sheriff went down to a community meeting down in the Santa Teresa Sunland Park area. And the county was there, the sheriff was there. There was a question that came up about some public safety issues. Well, when the sheriff stood to speak, the county representative told us, sit down, be quiet. And the public started her basically saying to the county representative, let the sheriff speak. Let him speak. He's an elected official. He was elected by us. Let him speak. And whenever I watch this, and that's exactly right, what the sheriff is doing is calling out the county on when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. They want him to be quiet. They want him to shut up. They want him to sit down. We as the Deputies Association We support the community payers, and we're saying let the sheriff speak. Let him talk about the fact that the fleet that should have a full-time program is in disarray. County's going to say, we just bought new units. But if you just buy them one and done and don't put in a proper trading program, then our tax dollars are being wasted. The GRT, Commissioner Rawson, my hat goes off, Commissioner Rawson, he asked them, well, did you put the money in addition to, he asked the county finance, did you put the money in addition to the sheriff's budget, or did you just put it in the budget? The response, in the budget. So it didn't go up. No, it didn't go up. So you supplanted. They gave money while they took the same money out the bottom and moved it to another pile. It's a shell game, Kelly. And LetTheSheriffSpeak.com and the association are calling on the citizens. Call your representative. Call your county commissioner. Tell them, use the money as you said or give it back. Commissioners, give it back if you're not going to use it like you told the public you would. That's what the site's about.
And how can people be in contact? They go to the website and contact email or phone call or?
There's email. There's an address. If you saw in the paper on Friday and on Sunday, we ran a public safety survey. We talk about LetTheSheriffSpeak.com. Where you want the citizens, the county citizens, the city citizens, everybody to get together, fill out that questionnaire, get it back to us so we can take a Santa Claus size bag into the commission and say, let the people have their tax dollars go for what you said. That website, it's going to be ever changing. You're going to hear me on the radio. You're going to hear things. We have an arbitration coming up this week. We have all kinds of things dedicated towards going for use the money where you said. Now, the county needs to draw attention away from that. They're going to point at fingers, and they're going to do all these things. It comes down to one thing. You increase tax dollars. You and I live in this county. We want our tax dollars to go for what we think they're supposed to go and what we're told they're to go to. Contact your county representative. Contact your commissioner. Tell them. Spend it like you said or give it back. Give it back.
Now, there's been some people out there that say, you guys have already gotten your money and you're still complaining. What is the – and we answered that question in just a second. We got a phone call. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
It's Ralph Kelly. I'd like to ask Mr. Roberts, who made the decision to transport Barela 243 miles, and is that why she spent dollars? And why was he transported when, if he's such a dangerous man, he couldn't be taken right down here to Southern?
Well, okay, go ahead, Kent.
In reference to that, we contacted various agencies in reference to attempting to try and get him closer, and we were declined in reference to the fact that there is a danger in putting any law enforcement representative into a detention facility. And so what it was, basically, that's where it was the closest that we found that we would be able to be accepted. As far as putting him into our own facility, that is not wise in the aspect that we did not want to place him in any type of position to be around personnel who would be put in a difficult position to decide whether or not to treat him fairly or unfairly. We wanted purposely that every right be given to him, but the big right being safety. And so, but we did contact, or I say we, it was contact, it was outside my case agent side, but contact was made with all surrounding, and that was the closest we could get. I wish that we could have used Southern or any of those, but then again, it comes down to the wardens of those.
That's five counties that you transported him through. That's Otero, Doniana, Eddie, Chavez, I forget the other county. You mean to tell me that there's five counties here in New Mexico that were bypassed?
No, sir. What I'm telling you is that we reached out to all of our surrounding counties and they declined, which is up to the detention facility. The one that he was taken was the first one that said, yes, we will accommodate you.
You have paperwork to prove that, I'm assuming.
I wasn't part of that. That would have been through the sheriff's department as far as contacting that. But there is never paperwork assigned to contacting your local director over the phone.
Ralph, anything else? At least they didn't fly him to New York.
Thank you, Kelly. No,
thanks.
That's it.
Thanks. Have a good day. All right, we've got another call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connor Show. Who's this?
Good morning. It's Lily. How are you today?
Good, Lily. How's it going? Can you turn down your radio?
Good. Sure. I was going to tell you that I heard that Mr. Caldwell had actually went and picked up Mr. Varela, and he never spent a single minute in a cell, and they brought him lunch. Now, as a taxpayer, I'm outraged that if he's arrested, well, he needs to be put behind bars like the rest of the felons, because that's what he is.
Well, what did he have for lunch?
I have no idea, but that's what I heard. Another thing, I've also heard that Mr. Garcia, Dr. Garcia, has paid history leading to his double Y in Chaparral. He used county money, and we had two commissioners actually approve that, which was Garrett and Hancock. I, as a taxpayer, won my street pay, but I can't have that. But Dr. Garcia, where is his integrity? Come November, come the primaries, we need to vote them out. We need to get rid of Deborah Weir and Julia Brown because they are vicious people. And I'll be the first one, Kelly, to tell you that I thought it was a vengeance. But all this, after reading the article, seeing the news, I'm outraged. I'm angry as a taxpayer because I live in this county and we have Julia Brown just making a mess of our life. She's not even from here. Another thing, I heard that her brother-in-law was the finance manager, and he is married to her sister. What in the world? Talk about nepotism.
Wow.
Nepotism is not only family, it's also when you show favoritism to a friend or to somebody that you know. It's ridiculous with Deborah Weir, Julia Brown, Hancock, and Dr. Garcia.
Yeah.
And if I were a taxpayer in Doña County and you have those two people up for election, you need to remind yourself that they've not done the will of the people. They've done the will of themselves is what they've done. That's what Hancock did with those buses. He said no, but he didn't care what our money. He didn't care about what we thought. Mr. Hank, you used your own money out of your own personal checking account instead of county people. The majority are poor and are trying scraping to pay their property taxes, but yet you disregard our will. I am sick and tired, Kelly, of all these people. And you know what? Mr. Roberts, great job. I am proud of you, and I'm so sorry that I did doubt your department.
Well,
I am very sorry.
Lily.
But you know what? Enough.
Lily, you're going off like a teapot here, but let me ask you this. What is the connection between downtown Julia Brown and can you explain what you just mentioned?
Yes, I heard a rumor that the finance manager, I forgot his name, is married to her sister. They came from California. They're not from here.
Bill Nolan?
They don't know our culture.
Bill Nolan?
Bill Nolan.
He must
but he has a
little jungle fever there, huh?
Yeah, and he has a degree in psychology. Really? You gotta be kidding. And you don't even know the first thing about numbers, and you're working with our money?
Wow.
It's ridiculous. This is what's ridiculous.
Lily, could you leave your address, by the way, in case Julian needs to get your car?
Oh, absolutely. I'm probably going to have to put her on my insurance.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
all the commissioners knew, but nobody said anything. And the only one that had really the nerve not to renew her contract was Ms. Benavides. And what happened? She did not renew her daughter's contract for a victim's advocate. Ridiculous.
Jeez.
You can't see that? I don't know. That's
you're very well informed, Lily. I'll give you that. Anything else?
Absolutely.
Anything else?
No. Just let's vote Dr. Garcia. Let's vote Hancock out. Let's put people that are going to do the will of the people. And we have to support our law enforcement.
Lily, please get over to lettheSheriffSpeak.com. Tell all your friends, thank you so much, and you are exactly right. It's about doing what our commissioners are supposed to represent the public. They're supposed to represent the public's interest, and thank you so much for being a listener.
Thanks for calling
in.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, so I sense that Julia Brown may be joyriding in Lily's car later today. But anyway, so we'll it's just a rumor. I was told in very forceful terms by someone who knew that I was totally mistaken, but I'm not the one who called in And I was just making a joke out of Julie Brown taking people's cars. What do I know? 743, Kelly O'Connell Show with Ken Roberts. 1450 KOBE on AM Las Cruces. 523-1450. And we'll be right back. Folks, 746, and I got Ken Roberts here. Ken, thanks for coming on.
Oh, you're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with you anytime.
Yeah, it's great. And is Julia Brown is your boss, right?
And
technically?
Yeah, technically, yes. She's the boss of all personnel within the county employees.
All right. Well, good luck in your future then.
I appreciate that. I'd like to invite everybody to letthesheriffspeak.com. And although I ran for sheriff, I am very thankful that we have the sheriff we had and that he is very supportive of public interest. And he's one of those few in the county that I think are understanding of public trust. And thank you to the citizens for all you do for us.
Thanks a lot, Ken. We'll get you back on here real soon. All right, folks, Ken Roberts there. And all right, so I had mentioned to you something about the bringing Ken on was kind of a last minute thing. And so, we had been in contact. I hadn't talked to him in quite a while, but he had asked if he could come on the show and just kind of let people know where the state of things were at. So especially wanted to talk about the Let the Sheriff Speak website. But anyway, all right. So I had mentioned an idea that, well, of course, I'm not a researcher, so this is just kind of speculation on my part. But I was thinking about the earthquakes that we've had, and I'm looking at a map right now of the Ring of Fire, and there is an extraordinary number of volcanoes going off right now in the Ring of Fire. All right, so here is Central America and the Caribbean. Colima is going off. Popocatépetl, Central Mexico, is raining down ash on 25 million people. Santiaquito, Guatemala, is going off. Fuego in Guatemala is going off. Pacaya volcano in Guatemala is going off. That's a little bit tight there, huh? Mamo Tombo in Nicaragua, and Masaya in Nicaragua. And in South America, you've got Villa Rica in central Chile, Copahue in Chile, Argentina, Sangay, Ecuador, Ubinas, Peru, Tungurahu, Ecuador, Reventador, Ecuador. We just had the earthquake in Ecuador. And so around this Ring of Fire, in Hawaii, Kilauea is going off, Papua New Guinea, Rabaul. So anyway, I could go through all these, but and slaughter the pronunciation. But there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 more that are going off in the Ring of Fire, Kuril Islands to the Philippines. There are 30 or 40 or 50 volcanoes going off now around the Ring of Fire, and around the rest of the earth doesn't really look like that many. I think that Indonesia is included in the Ring of Fire. So 2, 4, 6 more going on over there. All right. My question is this. We've got almost unparalleled levels of volcanoes going off. Is it possible that global warming is tied into volcanic activity and magma coming closer to the surface? And the reason that I ask that is, number one, they say that global warming is caused by particles in the air, carbon and such. And these volcanoes pump out a massive amount of particulates. Some of them put out, I mean, so much cloud and ash, dust and everything, that it would seem to be larger than any city or any country, even, you know, with some of these eruptions going on for weeks or months and just constantly pumping the ash into the air. And the fact that it seems like we're on an uptick. Now, I don't know, claim to know what causes the volcanic activity to increase, and whether the sun, the sun, the moon, and the stars have anything to do with it, what type of internal activity. But anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there to you. It's possible that the volcanic activity has more to do with global warming than anything else. Just a theory. 751. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 1450 KOBE, 523 1450, and we'll be back. All right, so I was looking through over the weekend, I was looking through some of the stories, and here's one. Mexico's Papa Catapultal volcano spews ash 2 miles into the air. Puebla is caked in white dust as eruptions force closure of airport. 25 million people affected, and that was on April 18th, 2016. And there's pictures of it, and you can see everywhere people walking with masks and white ash everywhere. All right. So I looked for some of the stories. Some of the things that I found were kind of interesting. We already did a show on Yellowstone, in which there's this magma pool underneath Yellowstone, but underneath that, there's a connection to a much, much larger. And so they say it could be any day, or it could be, you know, 100 to 1,000 years that it went off. But there's other volcanoes that are in the same category. A deep magma reserve was discovered below Mount Rainier. Researchers from Norway and the U.S. have mapped an 8 by 16 kilometer magma chamber at 8 kilometer depth below Washington State's Mount Rainier. And in case of Mount Rainier, predicting an eruption is an urgent matter. The 4,392 meter high volcano has erupted and collapsed multiple times in the past. And so they say, any eruption that came up would be no surprise because of this. Mount St. Helens, I've got another story here, strong eruption of San Cristobal volcano, Nicaragua, and that's just a few days ago. That was 2 days ago. Magma pool found underneath Mount St. Helens, which is created one of the most spectacular eruptions ever in the history of, you know, since we've been around in America. and there is underneath Mount St. Helens, but two down to the right, I don't know from which side, but there is a massive magma chamber, and that fed the Mount St. Helens explosion. And this is discovered in November 4th, 2015. They do an article on this. There's a magma chamber, I believe, up north here in the state. So I don't know what is causing these volcanoes to erupt more frequently, of course. And scientists, I'm sure, don't completely understand, but there have been spectacular eruptions in the past. One of them occurred in northern New Mexico, which is one of the, if not the most volcanic states in the nation, not too long ago. And you have the explosion out of Mount St. Helens, but you've got other volcanoes that are sitting on top of magma chambers that make them ticking time bombs, really. So Mount Rainier, and there was a few others that I had discovered. But anyway, my thought is, what if all of the global warming was more connected with volcanic activity, which is definitely seems to be on the uptick. And here's another one, eruption of Mount Mazama, which is where Crater Lake is now, happened before, and could happen again. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Thanks to Ken Roberts coming in. And hope you have a great day. We'll meet you back in 22 hours with Walt Rubel. And really enjoyed hanging out with you. AM Los Cruces, 1450 KOBE. Kelly O'Connell, ciao. Kelly, who is this?
This is David, the creator guy.
Hey, what's up, man?
Oh, man.
How's it going?
Good. Great stuff you put on the news there. I love that about the volcanoes and all that stuff.
Thanks, man.
I'm the one that called you about the Donnan area and the questions going on around here.
Yeah, no, I'd love some more calls on that. It's pretty interesting. I went up to Dripping Springs over the weekend, and it was I was looking for, you know, volcanic stuff, and I was kind of researching rhyolite and the granite and all that different basalt and everything. I'm just kind of educating myself.
Pick up a map and look from Raton to Little Rock, Arkansas. Put your finger on Cimarron Canyon, which starts in Raton, which is Volcano Park, and it follows all the way over to Little Rock, Arkansas.
Okay.
Both of those are hot spots. There's where all the earthquakes are happening. Fracking has nothing to do with it. These are two huge hot spots happening. But this right here is the elephant.